yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow, now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host Eddie Trunk.
Hey everybody, it's Eddie Trunk and welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast, bringing you interviews with the biggest names in rock each and every Thursday. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for listening. It is greatly appreciated. And as I remind you every week, every single interview on the podcast originated on my live radio show, Trunk Nation, which is heard Monday through Friday on Volume, Sirius XM channel 106, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time live with nightly re-airs 10 to midnight Eastern. Anything you want, anytime you want on the Sirius XM app. If you aren't already joining me for the Daily Trunk Nation on Volume, hope you come on board and listen each and every day live and get involved in the show. If you're only listening to the podcast, only getting a tiny, tiny taste of what we do on the radio show each and every day. And of course, to those around the world that can't get Sirius or XM, thank you for listening to the podcast. And this is another way for me to bring you some of the interviews that I do on a daily basis on the radio in the U.S. and also heard, of course, in Canada. Okay, so this, if you recall, last week I brought you an interview that I did recently with Neil Sean of Journey. This week, another guitar icon. Did this interview live a few weeks ago with Joe Perry of Aerosmith. Joe found himself with some free time given that Steven Tyler went into rehab. As we speak, Aerosmith were supposed to be playing their residency in Vegas. That got bumped into September because Tyler went into rehab. The good news is, to update things a little bit, Steven Tyler is out of rehab and doing, by every account, very, very well and getting very healthy, which is great to hear. And everything is on track for Aerosmith to start up playing live again in September with their big show at Fenway Park, long delayed because of the pandemic, celebrating their anniversary of 50 years, and then kicking into the Vegas residency. So that is all great stuff. Tyler on track for everything to work out, which is also great to hear. Joe Perry talks about the coming Aerosmith activities and the fact that he's now going to do some Joe Perry Project shows because he has this unexpected open time from Aerosmith. Now, some of those shows at the time you're hearing this, and since we did this interview, have now happened, but there's a lot of other great stuff in here about Joe Perry, so it was definitely worth bringing you this as the podcast this week. Enjoy, founding member of Aerosmith, a true guitar icon, and the guitarist of one of my all-time favorite bands, Aerosmith. Always great to visit with Joe. Here he is on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Joe, great to visit with you. Thanks for a few minutes. How you been, okay?
I've been good. You know, like I said, ups and downs over the last couple of years, but it's been okay at this end of it. You know, it's been kind of weird sleeping in, Billy and I sleeping in our own beds, you know, night after night without having to worry about packing our bags at some point. After about a year, I said, this is how most people live, you know? I mean, it's kind of strange, you know? I mean, having the same kitchen, the same everything, you know? So, but on the other hand, you know, I really miss being out there and traveling, you know? I mean,
what have you, in the downtime of the whole pandemic and lockdown and what have you, in all the artists that I talked to during that time, a lot have done different things. Some have picked up hobbies, some have just enjoyed being home, like you just said, and others have written and made music, whether it's for solo records or for their band. Can you let us in on some of the stuff you did during the lockdown? Did you do any things like that?
Well, unfortunately, Billy's mom, you know, my mother-in-law, passed away right around the lockdown time when everything was like, and so it was kind of, it was a rough family time and just trying to figure out what the, you know, what was going on. At the same time, we've moved down to Florida. And so the rest of that year was kind of moving down here. And then after that, it was kind of like moving in. So how anybody knows when they move out of not everybody, but we moved out of a house we've lived in for 33 years and moved down here. And it was that was an adventure. And, you know, so we were doing that, and, you know, and I have a couple of hobbies that, you know, I've gone into. And then over the last year, I put a studio together and started started playing. And, you know, for the next time we're going to play out sometime. And because it seemed like every year it was like, well, next summer's canceled. You know, anyway, so, you know, we were busy, but it was also great to kind of hang around and kind of live normally, you know.
You know, your house in Massachusetts, I was there once. We did a radio special when you guys did the tour with Motley, and we did it. I did the interview with you and the band from your studio, which was called Boneyard, if I remember. Did you relocate all of that? Did you sell it?
No, I didn't sell it. Right now, it's in storage, and I'm debating whether or not to put it in down here. I probably will, but things are starting to get rolling, and maybe next year, I don't know, but I'll definitely have Boneyard self, you know. But I do have a small studio set up so I can play and write and stuff. So, and also we finished off I put that solo album out. Going on 3 years now? Switzerland Manifesto, and we had a bunch of songs that were left over, and we had written some like two or three more. And we figured out, let's put it out on vinyl. And so we've been working on that and getting the test pressings and the artwork, which has been a lot of fun because, you know, that's one of the things I missed about vinyl is getting all that space to put pictures and credits and all that stuff that, when you get the record, you get the whole thing. You don't have to go digging around on YouTube to get the credits,
right,
who played and all that stuff. It's like, you know, I mean, you open up the centerfold and it's got like 40 or 50 pictures of all the guys that played on the record. It was a lot of fun putting that together, and that'll be out, I don't know, in the next couple of months. But actually, I think it's, I don't want to, I mean, I think it's a better version, but we're calling it Switzerland Manifesto Mark II. So that's going to be out on vinyl, and we'll be playing some of the stuff on these gigs that I have coming up, you know.
And just to be clear, and we'll talk about those gigs in a second, but just to be clear, Switzerland Manifesto II is going to be an all new record that's going to be made up of new stuff and stuff that didn't make the first one, or a reissue of the other one with bonus tracks?
There's I think there are four songs that were on the first one. And then the rest is stuff we recorded that just, it wasn't ready to go yet. And some stuff that we wrote over the last, it's hard to say, you know, almost everything you go, well, a couple of years ago, you got to add 2.5 to that, you know, where really nothing happened, but except listening back to different mixes and mastering and that kind of thing. But in fact, the two of the songs that I wrote with my sons. One was with Roman, and one was with Tony, my our youngest and the second youngest. And I had some time in London on the last Aerosmith tour, and I booked some time in Mickey Most's studio. You probably remember who he is, and we wrote a couple of tunes, and those were on there. And one of them has got Gary Cherone singing, and the other one has Chris Robinson from the Black Crowes, you know. So we're playing those live. So those are on there, and some other stuff that hasn't been out. And so it's kind of like a taste of the last one and a bunch of new stuff.
Yeah, I saw Gary. Gary's a good friend. I saw him a couple weeks ago at an Extreme gig. We were talking about this, and I know that he's getting ready to, he'll be in. Now there's three Joe Perry project dates announced for the U.S. so far, and they're July 21, Hampton Beach Casino, July 22 with ZZ Top in Boston, and on the 23rd, Hard Rock in Atlantic City. The band for these shows, Joe, is going to include Gary singing, right? Take us through the rest of the lineup.
Yeah, and then we've got, it just so happens that the drummer that played with me for almost a year with the last lineup of the project, Joe Pett, who's from Boston, and he's on drums. And then Buck Johnson, who plays with me in Aerosmith, on keyboards, and also with the Vampires. And then Chris Wise, who's the bass player for the Vampires, and now Joe Perry project member. So we've got a really good lineup of guys. I'm really excited about it. The thing is, the two shows that we're playing in Brazil that kind of kick things off, where they do this festival every year. They call it a blues festival, but it's a blues festival like Montreux is a jazz festival. You know, the Vampires played there on the last tour. So, you know, they're a little loose about, having to have so-called blues, but what they really want are some instrumentals. So I'm going to get to play at least a half an hour of instrumentals that I've, scattered all over my solo records. And one of them was called Mercy. It was nominated for a Grammy. I lost to Les Paul, but
not a bad person to lose to.
I would have voted for him, anyway. And so I've never played those songs live. So we're really digging into those. And then we'll play some more bluesy based stuff. But, as usual with the project, we do some of my stuff. And we'll throw a couple of Aerosmith songs in there. It's just, you never know what you're going to get, but it's going to be a lot of fun,
So obviously, Joe, these dates happening in July, originally you were booked to be with Aerosmith in Vegas. The residency was supposed to start. That's now going to start in September. We'll talk about that in a second. But doing this window opened as a byproduct of Aerosmith being pushed back with Steven having his issues. So really this is a bit of a silver lining in that for you, that you have a chance to fire up the project again, right?
Right. I mean, it was, every once in a while I'll get a call, do you want to play this festival and wherever, and to pick up and just bring a band over to England or Germany or something to play at a festival. It just doesn't make sense to get together and rehearse for a week and then go out and play one gig. So a lot of those have to turn down. But as it happened, this one came in, right around the time we were, canceling the first Vegas run. And then we figured, if we can build some more shows in there, we were lucky to be able to grab those other couple of shows up in the New England area, you know. So it's gonna be fun, and also get me kind of warmed up and remind me of what I do for a living and for when we get going with Aerosmith, you know.
Do you think that there's a chance you'll add more project shows? I mean, there's three right now. Do you think you'll add more, or you're not able to because of the Aerosmith schedule?
Well, right now I think that the Aerosmith schedule has gotten pretty sewn up till the holidays. But every time I put a band together like this, there are more guys I can call up that make the rehearsal times shorter. We'll always be bringing new shows to the set, but everybody's pretty comfortable playing, some of the stuff, it makes it easier to pick up and then do one or two or three shows, you know. So I'm sure just by doing this, having Chris on bass and played with Gary a bunch of times, and as well as being on the record, the list gets a little longer of guys I can call up, and if they have some open time, I'll be able to get out there and play some solo shows, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. But, Joe, I've talked to you many times about the project records, especially the first two, especially the first one, Let the Music Do the Talking, which is one of my favorite records ever. I still listen to it to this day, nonstop. I love it top to bottom. It's such a raw, live, real rock record. I just love everything about it and how it still holds up. Can you take the audience back into where you were at the time making that record? It's such an interesting period. I know it was a tough time for you leaving the band, dealing with personal demons and all of that. But making that record, what are your recollections of doing it, stepping out of Aerosmith for the first time and recording that record? Did you have a good time doing it?
I had, back then in the 70s when we were basically on the road or doing albums, I always had kind of a bunch of tunes ready to go and kind of, ready to bring to the band. And, kind of near the end of that, I know that I played Let the Music Do the Talking for Steven, but it was at a point where it was a lot more was going on, and it was just time to leave and take a break. And like I've said many times, if cooler heads had prevailed, we would have taken a vacation. It was time. We've been working for better part of the decade, and it was time. We should have taken a couple of years off, and so we did. But I had to leave the band for a while to do it and get some stuff out of my system, and then so I had these riffs and it was, I had a lot going on, like you said, and it was pretty easy to come up with some lyrics to go with it, and Jack was right there. We'd worked together on pretty much the whole decade, and it was a lot of fun, and working with those guys. And I remember seeing Ralph Mormon singing with that band Daddy Warbucks, who was another Boston band, and I remember thinking, if someday I need a singer, he's the guy I'm going to call. And that was back in like 1971 or something. And so, he was the first one I called, and then David Hull was an old friend, and so on. So that putting the band together was happened pretty quick, but the best part was really getting in and playing the stuff live in the studio. You know, and again, back then, it's not like you had unlimited tracks. You know, went to tape, and you did takes, and when you got a good one, that was it. And then you just did some overdubs, and bang, you know. But it was kind of tough because I know the record. You know, it sounds like sour grapes, but you know, I talked to the managers. You know, Aerosmith's managers back then, and they actually came out and said, like, don't push this record because we'll starve them back to Aerosmith. Because everybody, you know, the record company wanted the band back. You know, the managers wanted the original lineup. And it was kind of like, when I heard that, I kind of suspected it. But when I, you know, three decades when I was writing the book, and I started hearing some of that stuff from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Because I always wondered why it didn't get any more notice than it did. And, it's kind of been, but, you know, hey, that was then, this is now. And, you know, Aerosmith, we played Let the Music Do the Talking on the first record when we got back together.
Yeah, so, yeah. It was interesting thing. It was Let the Music Do the Talking was the lead track with rewritten lyrics from Done With Mirrors, the first record back when you rejoined the group. But you talk about how that record was received at the time, and maybe you feel like it was that whole period was sabotaged to some degree because they wanted you back in Aerosmith. But I'll tell you, 40 something years later, for people listening, seek that record out, man. It is one of my favorite records to this day. And Joe, real quick on Let the Music Do the Talking, I had a listener ask me that they can't find that record anywhere. It seems to be out of print now. Do you know if there's any plans to have it put back in print or on streaming, or maybe even do a special edition of it at some point?
Well, I would. Right now, we're like neck deep in getting ready to celebrate Aerosmith's 50th. You know, the way that they counted, I guess, is from 25 years from the first record release. You know, in my book, it's like when the fans first sits together in a room and goes, all right, we're all together. We're going to make it or break it, you know. And that's when I think a band starts. But, you know, I guess they just say, you know, when the band's first record comes out, that's, you know.
I think that's how the fans see it. Yeah, that's how the fans would see it, yeah.
Yeah, so that's coming up next year, and we're just starting to get we spent the last 3 years, going through, just kind of trying, like, cataloging all the stuff. I mean, we have so many tapes and so many shows from every decade. And different. And the other thing is, you know, every song that we recorded in the studio, you know, there was like two or three takes, and, you know, one of them was the one we used. And for whatever reason, doesn't mean it was a bad take. It just, maybe there was something about it that we liked better than the other one. So we're going to release some of those. And there are a lot of different things that are going to come out. There are songs that haven't played in forever. And those will be released. I mean, so it's almost like getting a whole nother look at all the stuff that we did over all those years, you know. And so that's what we've been doing right now, because we've got that, like I said, the 50th is coming up, and the gig at Fenway Park is kind of like the playing at home for the first time in a long time is kind of like it's kicking off the rollout. and we've got box sets coming out and all that. So, but somewhere in there, I'm going to, you know, I've got, you know, Paul Geary is managing my solo stuff, and we're going to start, you know, digging into my stash of stuff. You know, I've got something like what, seven or eight solo things. Some, you know, some better than others, but all of them are like, anyway, so, you know, I'd like to release, get them all on vinyl at least, you know, vinyl on this new one is like, it sounds so much better than, you know, I've got it off, iTunes, listen to it off of my phone or my iPad, and then I listen to it off the vinyl, and it's like, it's the difference is striking, you know. I mean, you hear so much more in there and so much depth, but you know, you got to leave it up to the listener to decide, you know, what's better. But I think that having the chance to listen to vinyl, do it, you know. Anyway, so that's, you know, I would like to be able to do that. I don't know if, you know, I'll be able to, you know, tour the kind of tour, solo tour that I'd like to do. Because if we can, like we've got the Vampires, we announced the dates a week ago.
For Europe.
For next summer. And I don't know, we may do some gigs in the States. But it's really hard between Johnny's schedule and Alice's and my schedule to get. That's why we had to book it so far out, you know, because it was like the calendar's empty, so to speak. So we put our heel mark on those a couple of weeks, and you know, because that band is. I love playing with that band. So anyway, so we got that going on. And
yeah, you got a lot going on. It's great that at this point, you know, 50 years in, you still got so much going on. Real quick on Aerosmith, I want to go back to something you said. So you're talking about 50 years and going through the catalog and all of that. You already put out a release, for people that don't know, called The Road Starts Here, which is a recording from 1971. So, Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like for this anniversary period that Aerosmith is in, you guys are going to go into the archives a little bit more. Will we see more things like that? And do you know, is there video? Is there any video from like even back in the day that you might be able to source and put together?
We're trying to find as much video as we can. And, you know, it was a whole different era back then. I mean, cell phones, cameras. I mean, now, I mean, you can go online and you can make a great live video of a whole show with 2 hours after the show. I mean, just from what's on YouTube. But from back then, I mean, to film, you had to have, you know, the average camera had a cassette that would only record, you know, you could film for 3.5 minutes, and then you had to change cartridges, and the cameras were bulky, and it was, so to find video, it's usually from some TV show or something. And they had a lot more music TV shows in Europe, so we can go there and dig around. But you know, we get stuff from fans all the time. You know, somebody will get through, and they've got like you know, some whole movies of us playing, and usually not like a whole song, but you know, enough so you can get an idea of what's going on. And we also used to film videos mostly for promotion. Like the record companies would get together every year and basically show what they were going to release that year. So it was a big event, and we used to, everybody used to shoot videos, and they never really made it on TV the way that, you know, MTV happened, and then, of course, you know, where we are now. But those are lying out there. Any song that we did was released as a single probably has a video to go with it, and we're finding all this stuff out as we go along. So, and it's an ongoing process. I get a call from a guy named Steve Berkowitz, who's been a he's been in the business forever, and he's from Boston, and he's working the putting a lot of this stuff together. And we'll go, wow, we just found this, and we just found that, and so to answer, the short answer is, it's a moving process. Right now, we have some video stuff, but I had a camera, and the we played the Silver Dome in Detroit. And I think it was the Silver Dome. And I think we were the second band to play there and fill it. And I have like a 2-minute clip, and it's so blurry. It could have been the Who, but I know it was because we were the ones playing. But anyway, it's stuff like that that we've got lying around, and it's been, so we've been busy, talking about this and getting it rolling over the last few years. So it's going to start coming out. There's going to be a box set. I'm not sure when the release date is, but it's there's video from every decade, I think. In fact, I was just looking at it about an hour ago, the trailer, and it looks really good. They got stuff from every decade, so it's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of work too.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait for it all to come out. And it's amazing to sit here and talk about 50 years of Aerosmith. It's like you said, it's actually even been more than that. I'm sure you never envisioned back in the 1970 when this thing started up, you'd still be sitting here talking about re-releases, new releases, solo stuff. New stuff coming. And of course the residency, as we mentioned, Fenway, and then you've got the one show that's in, I believe in Maine just before that.
Yeah.
And then the residency starts up again in Vegas at the same theater. Now I caught two shows the last time you did it, and I absolutely loved it. It starts up again in Vegas on September 14th at Park MGM. I imagine you, since you're going back for more, I imagine you liked being on a residency and not getting off stage and having to transport and go somewhere on a plane or a bus and staying put. You enjoyed the experience of doing that, I would think.
Well, it's great. I mean, they built that theater for sound. I mean, I got, probably 80% of the buildings you play were made for basketball, hockey, all kinds of events and music. So they're not really designed for music, but they've built this venue for music, all different kinds of music, but everything from a Cirque du Soleil show, which relies heavily on amazing music, and and there's a huge stage and all, and so it's a, there are so many pluses to it, for us, again, being able to stay in the same place and fine tune the sound and they've upgraded it. Dolby has come in and they've got this new process. So it was really good last time. I mean, it was state of the art last time we played there, but now it's like, it's gone over the top. I mean, you feel like you're on stage with the band, the way the sound is. So,
and you actually have people on stage with the band, we should mention. You can actually buy a seat on the stage with the band. I saw that when I was there.
Yeah, well, we figured, there's always friends and family and guests and stuff on either side of the stage. You put up a a velvet rope or something, and there's people on the side.
Yeah.
And we figured, well, why not put some bleachers up there? I was thinking like the Elvis 1968 comeback show.
Right.
When he was on the stage and all the fans were like sitting around, you know, and I thought, well, why not have them up there like kind of part of the show, you know, like with lights, you can make it so that you just focus on the band. And then there's other times with lights, it becomes part of the show, you know? And it's, so it's a great venue to play. And we really, we love playing there. We have two runs booked in the next, you know, like in this, up till, the holidays, the one right after the Fenway show. And then there's another one after that. But, the other thing, the other side of it is I do like the traveling, you know, I like, especially in Europe, but even in the States, going to all the different cities, you know, when we were first starting, we went from city to city and found fans that support us. And it's great to go back. You know, I mean, this country is so different in different parts. It's like if it had been settled like Europe, we'd have been a bunch of different countries. You know, I mean, you go to Texas, it's definitely different there. You go down to New Orleans, it's different. You go to the to California, it's different. You go up to Detroit, it's different. And there's a vibe there. And rock and roll brings everybody together. And it's, you know, I feel like the troubadours from the, you know, the medieval times going from city to city. So, you know, what the fans who are living in Texas is seeing the show, you know, that we're bringing to the Hollywood Bowl or Staples Center or, you know, they change the names now so often, it's hard to keep track, but you know what I'm talking about, you know? And so I do miss the traveling, you know? You know, next year we'll be doing both.
Hey, Joe, I'll only keep you a couple minutes more, I promise you, because I'm just, I wanted to ask you a few quick things on this. My audience always, always has discussions with me on the air about bands and their set lists and how they don't change them and how they do change them or they don't change them enough and deep tracks versus hits that you have to play. Aerosmith is in a unique position and an amazing position where you have so many hits and a segment of songs you have to play in every show. Otherwise, most of the crowd will go nuts. But I know you like to also put in, you'll put in a Kings and Queens or No More, No More or Lickin' a Promise or something like that. How when you get ready to celebrate 50 years of Aerosmith, how does the set list situation work? Who makes the call? Who makes the final call? And who decides the balance between the ones you got to do and the ones maybe you'd like to dig out?
Well, we all do. I mean, that's probably the biggest issue from show to show. It's like figuring out the set list. And, you know, what we rehearse a lot of songs, you know, before we get started, whether it's a tour or Vegas or whatever. And so we have stuff in our back pocket that all it will take is a sound check to bring it up to speed. And what we will do is, you know, John Bianelli, who you know, and who's been with me, he's my road manager, but also, you know, he's been around, been with the band, geez, 25 years. And like I said, and he's one of the ones that did all the cataloging of all of our stuff, you know, basically right to the road starts here. And so, you know, he has a really good, a good idea about, you know, what songs the fans that we have to play, you know, and it's not like we feel like we have to play them. It's just that we know that those are the songs that, you know, people would miss if we didn't play them. But then there's room in there for some of the deeper cuts. And then sometimes we go really deep, you know, and those, like one or two of those. And then kind of maybe some, because we know when we look out in the audience and you got families out there, you got kids who are just discovering Aerosmith, and you got the parents who grew up with it. And it's kind of wide open. You just have to get used to doing some songs where people are going to sit down But they don't leave. They're just listening because they might not have heard the song before, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
But then after that, and sometimes we'll take a song like say, "Baby, Please Don't Go," and we love playing it so much, we leave it in the set for a while, and then it turns into a high point for us, you know, because it's kind of a jam, kind of a blues song, and it's like high powered, and you know, and once in a while we'll fall upon a song like that, and that'll be part of the set, and again, it's got so much energy. It's not like you have to have heard it before, you know. You just hear in rock and roll, you know, the way it's supposed to be. You know, you shouldn't have to like know the song to at least get off on it, you know, at least that kind of rock and roll. You know, everybody wants to hear stuff that they know and can sing along with. And, you know, we always picture ourselves sitting in the audience, and I know what songs I would want to hear when I'm seeing some of the bands I like, you know.
And Joe, Joe, let me jump in here on something, because something just hit me. Here's the other thing that's so beautiful about Aerosmith and what you do like that with the set. Rock and roll doesn't have to be perfect. One of my biggest peeves in music right now are these artists that are using tracks and all this fake garbage, and it's not real. Rock and roll is supposed to be that real live experience. And when I saw you guys in Vegas, the last run, one of the two nights that I went, you guys had a few mishaps on stage. There were some little flubs here and there. And I'll never forget it. At the end of the night, you and Steven came out to the edge of the stage to thank the audience. And Steven said something like, "Joe, we really messed up a couple times tonight, didn't we?" And everybody laughed and said, "Yeah, we had a couple." And Steven said to the crowd, "But you guys all had a great time, didn't you?" And the crowd just went nuts. I mean, that's what it was about. I appreciated that so much. It was one of my favorite Aerosmith shows, because that's what rock and roll supposed to be. You were just going for it.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you appreciate that, because, you know, one of the things that we didn't want to happen in Vegas, I mean, we know we're competing for, you know, other shows, again, Cirque du Soleil, the Love Show, the you know, great magician shows, and all, there's so much entertainment there. We know we had to put some production into the show, you know, to keep people, you know, not just go out there and shorten the set a little bit. You know what I mean? Which, you know, I've seen a few bands do. So that was we really, you know, brought some production in. But, you know, some people even suggested, like, well, you could play three songs and then you could do like an interview about how you wrote them. And then you could do two more songs and then you could talk about where you were. And it was like, no. Once the music starts, it's a rock and roll show.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the lights are going to be spectacular, and, you know, the places where we can get close to the audience are going to be different, but it's a rock and roll show, bottom line. And that's why it's sometimes, it falls apart, you know, like some of the things we did. I'm not sure if I did it on the last couple of shows, but one of my favorite solos of all time is Jimmy Page in Heartbreaker, and any guitar player will tell you that's one of the standout solos ever. And so I started trying to learn it, and I finally got it to the point where I felt comfortable enough to just play the solo. And so I just did, you know. It wasn't on the set list. You know, it was supposed to start something. I don't know what, but I just played that solo for like, it's like 2 minutes long, and the band comes in, and then, you know, the song finishes out, and I just turned around to the guys, and I just stopped the solo. And then the second night I did it, the drummer kicked in, and Tom kicked in, and you know, we all know it, but we didn't rehearse it or anything. And then by the third night, the whole band was in on it. And it was like that little three minutes of music was like, just to hear that for me was like, I mean, you know, Zeppelin stuff is such classic music. People are going to be playing that in 100 years. Guitar players are going to be learning those riffs because they are classic, you know. It's like playing Mozart. So if you can come close, why not? So, you know, I don't know. All I know is that it sounded great to hear everybody like fall into it, and we didn't have to rehearse it. You know, we did it on stage.
Yeah.
So it was part of that stuff that you're talking about, you know? We're just going to borrow 3 minutes of your time, if you don't mind, and get our rocks off.
Right.
So anyway.
That was awesome. All right, two quick things, and I promise you I'll let you go. Two quick things. The last Aerosmith album was Music from Another Dimension. It came out quite a long time ago at this point. Do you think that stands as the final ever Aerosmith album of all new material, or do you hope that the band can make a new record at some point?
For a long while after that record came out, I thought, you know, because we've put everything on there, every riff that we've had lying around. And then I was thinking, well, we're not going to do it. Why bother? We've already, you know, we've got all this other material that we need to release that the fans, I think, would love to hear. You know, different versions of Dream On, studio quality, you know, but you never know. I mean, Stephen and I have been, you know, our villas are like side by side in Vegas. So it's like, you never know. If you're in, you got some inspiration, it doesn't take long to write a song, you know, whether it's great or not. It's like, you don't know, you know, but if the feel is there, all I can say is you never know, you know. I mean, I would hate to think that was the last one, but you know, we've got so much stuff out there. It's hard to think about like trying to do something new, you know, but what the hell, you know, you never know.
Right. It's a big catalog to compete against. And the last question I have for you, and I'll let you go on this. I always wondered this. Aerosmith's catalog, so expansive, 50 years we're talking about celebrating. If there's one record in the Aerosmith catalog where you could get a do-over and you could go back and redo it or reassess it or just do a do-over, the one you'd love to have back, is there a record in the catalog you feel that way about?
Well, I think that I always felt that way about Done With Mirrors. I felt that it wasn't finished. You know, I mean, I don't think that we were a little, because we're coming back after the West Coast had taken over, you know, the sound and the way guitar players were playing. It was a whole different animal than the decade we came from. And so it was, you know, and working with Ted Templeman was like, it was like great. I mean, Jesus, his track record. I mean,
sure.
So I think we were both kind of like in awe of each other. So we ended up not throwing down as much as we would have liked to, you know? And so that's one that I would like to talk about. But on the other hand, you know, I got a call a couple of years ago from I think it was Classic Rock in England, the magazine,
number one record of the 80s, they called it. Yeah.
And I go, what? you sure you talk anyway? So I
love that record, though. There's My Fist, Your Face, and there's stuff on that record I love. So it's all just perspective, really,
you know. And so I thought about it for a couple of days, and I started listening to it from their point of view, from, you know, the rough and raw. And then I started hearing what they were talking about. It reminded me of like the first or the second record.
Right.
You know? And so I've always thought that one could have gone back in the studio and upped it, but you know, there's something about it. And it's funny because, you know, I always ask Gary, you know, who's singing in the project coming up, I was asking, you know, what songs you want to sing, you know? My Fist Your Face was one of the ones on the list, and Chip Away at the Stone.
Yeah.
And so those were in the set.
Oh.
So that's one of the things that I think at least people know up in, at least where I've played. I'd like to pull songs out that, you know, Aerosmith hasn't got to yet or whatever. I think last time we were doing Pandora's Box. So this time we're doing some other ones, you know,
right.
Along with, anyway, I'm not even sure, but it's a cross section, you know? So anyway,
well, listen,
that's it, you know.
All good stuff, man. All good stuff. I can't thank you enough for the time, Joe. I won't keep you longer. Everybody go to joeperry.com, aerosmith.com. And again, the project dates, July 21st, Hampton Beach Casino, 22nd, Leader Bank Pavilion with ZZ Top, and the 23rd, Sound Waves at the Hard Rock in Atlantic City. Maybe some more to come. And, of course, the Aerosmith residency returns to Vegas on September 14th. I'll be seeing you out there at some of this stuff, Joe. I'm looking forward to it. And my best to your family. Thank you so much for the time, man.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks to Joe Perry. Always great to talk to him. Can't wait to catch some of those coming Aerosmith shows. Really bummed that I didn't make any of the Joe Perry Project shows. Unfortunately, just didn't work out with my schedule. If you recall, Gary Cherone, who's singing for the project, was on this show about a month or two ago. We brought you an interview. Check the archives if you want to hear it. And he talked about how excited he was to sing some of that Joe Perry Project material. That has now since happened, and now Joe resets his sights on Aerosmith starting up again, which is super exciting, and I'm sure we'll cover more of that as we go. Thanks to Joe Perry. Be sure to subscribe every week to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Be sure to listen to me every day on Volume, Sirius XM Channel 106, live 2 o'clock Eastern, Monday through Friday, talking rock with you. Thanks to Joel Pollack for producing the podcast. See you next Thursday for another all-new episode, and hopefully you join me on the radio every day on Volume. Take care.